when you take a shower the following day and you like get the smoke smell again as the water's getting
dirty. Yes, it's like completely rejuvenating.
A couple of years ago, Brian and I were up in Indiana or Illinois or one of those weird fucking places where Jason lived, actually. And they still had bars that you could smoke in. Oh, and we went to this pool hall and
Indiana.
And it blew my mind that we used to be able to tolerate that.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Like I would go to bars in state college and be like, come home. Like, oh God.
Yeah, but I never cared then. In fact, I smoked then, but like, no, it just blew my mind. Like now that I've gotten used to not that smell, it was gross and it was in my clothes forever.
Yeah. Smoking is so trashy.
Well, unless you're cool about it, which I always was. I have it by my face. So anyways, hello and welcome. This week we watched 24-hour Party People.
24-hour Party People.
Kind of a cool movie. So our theme has been period pieces, and this is Brian's choice.
Yeah.
It takes place in like 1979 through what, like 94 or something. So I guess that is a period. Certainly.
It is a period.
The Manchester era.
So yeah, Brian, you chose 24-hour Party People. And I know for a fact that you have loved this movie for decades by now.
Oh my God.
Oh shit. Exactly 2 decades now this year.
Yeah.
You've seen it a million times. You got me to watch it way back in the day, probably close to when it came out. Why? Why this out of all period pieces? You went with this.
Why? Because I love this movie and I saw an opportunity to make you guys watch it. I've been wanting to get it in. And so I went with period pieces. Then I realized, oh, this is a period piece. It is a period of history and it is a period of musical history and cultural history. And so I just thought, what a great opportunity to make you guys watch it and see if I'm crazy or if other people liked it.
All right. 30 seconds plot real quick. I'm going to time you. Don't go over.
So it's shot in the style of a documentary where you feel like you're watching the real people interact with each other. And it covers the punk movement in England in the late 70s, early 80s. Starts with the Sex Pistols show with 38 people at the Sex Pistols show. And from there,
40 something.
It was
47, I thought.
Was it 42?
It was some 40s.
But from there, they point out everybody in who's kind of is central to the movie and their journey through music. We watched the music tell their journey all the way through the end. And it turns out it was just a bunch of civil love for Manchester, which I really enjoyed that part of the ending. Through the eyes of Tony Wilson, who breaks the fourth wall many times to directly talk to the audience, to us, and to tell us what's going on and to even dumb it down for us at times, which was probably what I appreciate. And we watch some people die along the way and some people get fat along the way. And some people, what happens in the lives of this musical movement from back then, one that I never really paid attention to or cared about until I saw this movie. And so that is, I find it fascinating that I knew the song Blue Monday. And then I watched this movie and I find out the history of the band that sang the song that I've heard because of Orgy, that band that remade it.
Like 2000, 2001?
Yeah. And that combined with the way it's shot, you just feel, I think I've talked about this before with other movies, but there's like
a fucking mess the way it's shot.
Well, it's a mess, but it's, if you feel lonely, watching that movie just makes you feel like there's people all around all the time.
It's true. That's a very interesting point.
It's like you've got friends around all the time because some of those characters are so peripheral, but they're there the entire time. And there's so many people who have gone on to do great work who show up in that movie. I loved it. And I loved the music in it, the music that it introduced me to. And I really loved Steve Coogan in the lead. I just thought he was brilliant. I mean, I've listened to the DVD commentary on this movie. And he talked about that hacienda that was in the movie. He talked that back in the day before he was acting, he did stand up there.
What?
Because he was a stand-up comedian. Nice. But I just thought he was so perfect in that lead role. And all the side characters were excellent to the point where Gollum shows up in the movie.
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis in a fat suit, no less.
And when I saw this movie, no idea who Andy Serkis is, right? And then
back in the day, that's right.
And he gets made out to be this great actor, motion capture actor. And now, he's been in plenty of things with his face now, but you're like, Andy Serkis was in that movie. Simon Pegg from Shaun of the
Simon
Dead.
Pegg. Shaun of the Dead hadn't come out yet, had it?
That was like a little, this was even before Spaced.
Yeah, I think
This was before Spaced?
This was 92. I think Spaced was like...
Oh, no. This was 2002. Spaced was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Patty, Constantine.
Adam introduced me to Spaced, and I have 99. Watched the full series, like... about every other year since then.
it's so good.
It's just like
I've always seen it, but I've never been able to pull the trigger, but it's that good.
It's just enough fiction and like surreal, but also just hilarious antics of feigning a couple in an apartment.
All right.
It's great. And Simon Pegg and the gal that plays in that was also in Shaun of the Dead, but very briefly.
They say in the commentary, like there's a bunch of people from Spaced in Shaun.
Yeah, Jessica Hines.
Yeah.
And Nick Frost, of course. So there's tons of roots.
There. Lenny James from The Walking Dead and from the new, what is that other Walking Dead show? He's in it. And that's where I see this is one of those
Shuffling Dead.
Fear the Walking Dead.
The Electric Thriller. Boogaloo Dead.
But it's one of those it's just one of those tentpole movies where I like when I see people from this movie and other stuff, I'm like, they were in 24 Hour Party People. And that includes
that's so weird.
That includes the guy who ended up dying by suicide, the lead singer of Joy Division, the character playing. He is the bad guy in those Tom Cruise in a couple of them. He's in two of them, I believe.
Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible, thank you.
Oh.
He's a lot older.
Yeah.
My friend Patrick looks exactly like him.
That's kind of creepy.
He's Philip Seymour Hoffman, right? Is that what we're talking about?
No.
Oh, that's way off.
Philip Seymour Hoffman wasn't in this movie.
You have a friend that looks just like Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah, that's not as creepy.
But I thought... He was the villain in Mission Impossible.
In one of them.
In one of them.
All right.
I believe in the J.J. Abrams one.
But also Philip Seymour Hoffman killed himself. Or did he just die?
No, Philip Seymour Hoffman overdosed.
So he can't kill him.
Died by suicide, Adam. Learn the terminology.
Sean Harris.
Yes.
Sean Harris. And he, let's see, what would he be in? All right. So Adam. What are your thoughts? You saw this movie. Is this your first time seeing this movie?
I didn't watch this movie.
Oh, no!
Who's your turn? So we're done. This is it. We're done. After tonight.
No, there's still one more period piece.
No.
No. I didn't get one because I didn't watch fucking 20 or the Mohicans. I watched it since.
Let's do better quick reasons.
Quick timeout.
What the hell?
Quick timeout. I did have an idea
for
something moving forward, not to include me today, because obviously I'm the one that didn't watch the last movie and I lost my turn because of it.
Doesn't include Adam either.
And now, Adam, you're fucked. Yeah. My idea was going to be this. If you watch the movie you missed in the following week, along with the following week's movie, that maybe you can earn your turn back after everyone else has had theirs.
If you miss a movie, you lose your turn.
Possibility. Huh?
Fair enough.
Ira, I've asked you to please use the word heck.
What the heck? There you go.
Adam willingly.
Dude, I love your mustache.
And it's because I was invested in house improvements.
Saved it.
Oh, Adam. Adam.
It. It, yeah.
You just lost your turn. So
no,
whatever I, you want to say why.
Oh, so.
Oh, I do this.
Eric, mute your mic. So I started running Ethernet cable up into my. I wanted to get Ethernet into this room because I have a.
What century fiber, do you live in?
But I have fiber optic and the modem or the routers don't do gigabit feeds on it yet.
Oh.
Especially upstairs. So I'm getting like 350. It's like, no,
oh, you want to need fiber optic directly to your upstairs.
Yeah. Oh, so fuck. I started wow. running the Ethernet cables from the router upstairs. And in doing so, I found out that the return air ductwork in my ductwork from the upstairs going down has been disconnected for years. And so I have been pulling back in return air into my house from the outside, technically conditioning that air for who knows how long, especially after the fact I got a new furnace installed and said, yeah, we pulled this duct off and all this water came out. It's like, you didn't ever think to maybe check as to why there was so much water in this ductwork. So
wait, you had a new furnace and or air conditioner AC. Put in and they did not look at any of the ductwork?
No.
Is a part of the process?
No. They just assumed it was connected because it bends down in the attic and it bends up in the crawl space.
You think they'd really want to upsell you though some bullshit and that they would be able to do that just by taking a quick look.
Seriously. They would have definitely gotten another probably grand out of me for it. So damn. I said, well, fuck it. I'm going to add this ductwork. So I pulled out all the ductwork and later do I find out that there's a national shortage of flexible ductwork and I cannot find 12 inch ductwork anywhere.
Oh man.
And then Laura left for Seattle and then I went on kind of a bender and then I went to see Fire Walk With Me at Alamo Draft House the night after. Yeah. So here's like Wednesday night happened. Thursday night, I went to see Fire Walk With Me at the Alamo Draft House. Friday night, I stayed up till 2 a.m. playing Magic with my brother and sister-in-law. Saturday night, Laura came home and I was also hungover all day Saturday. And then Sunday, Sunday, I was just catching up with Laura and caulking the bathroom. And doing
Adam, I don't care why you didn't watch it. I just care that you didn't watch it.
Oh no, because it's just like, this is why I didn't watch it.
Yeah, but he's
there's no reason that I couldn't have, but I was either just not there or too invested in doing everything else. So,
well, I'm also, period pieces was cut short.
No, this isn't a period piece, if you ask
me. You don't know that because you didn't watch it. So,
I watched a bunch of synopsis to try to bullshit my way through this.
Yeah.
And from what I watched, this is a mockumentary at best.
It's not a mockumentary at best. It's, and you didn't watch it, so you get no opinion on the topic. Eric?
I wanted to like this movie. I wanted to like it so badly because it's so cool, right? Like the subject matter is cool. The actors are cool. The era that they're describing is cool. The storytelling is very cool, but I was bored. So maybe I'm a Philistine here or something, but
at least you watched it. At least you made the effort.
I watched it. It had some good moments. I felt like it was either like they were trying to cram too much history into it, or I wasn't connecting with it. I guess that's the problem.
Well, what were the good parts that you liked? Let's start with some positives.
Some positives. All right. I liked how they framed the whole era through Tony Wilson's life, right? Like, and I liked Tony Wilson as a character in the movie because he was kind of a Renaissance man, which I thought made him seem cooler, but he was also kind of a bumbling everyman, right? Like he was kind of going along with stuff as it happened. And that made him a little more sympathetic as a character. So I thought that was pretty cool. But mostly it was just one damn thing after another. Like I never really got invested in the whole story. So.
Okay. Christopher.
I'm so surprised at that. however, I will say this much. I saw this movie close to when it came out. And I did not remember the movie at all. I knew that it I knew the gist of the framework. Like, it was about this record label and these particular bands out of Manchester at the time. And my memory was just like, that's a great movie. So I was, but for whatever reason, it's one of those movies I never went back to. So I watched it and I enjoyed it. It's not the great movie that I remember, because maybe now I'm a little less temperate when it comes to weird camera styles and shit. Like, it was really bouncy, a lot of fuzz. Every time they tried to throw up like a cue card, not a cue card, but like a card that said
a title card. Yeah.
A title card. Yeah. It was often very hard to read it. I'm just getting like, old and conservative, but no, I still think it is a very good movie, because I think Steve Coogan is a genius. I love Steve Coogan and everything he does. And what he did here is he takes the most obscure, specific story that relates to something that everyone can love, you know, the punk music out of Britain at the time, which a lot of people don't even like, but he makes it more relatable. He brings the audience in to a story that most people wouldn't care about. And I think he does a fantastic fucking job. And Brian, you saying that he once performed at the Hacienda, that's fucking amazing, because any director, casting director worth their fucking salt, if you can find someone like him that was actually there and a part of that fucking scene for even just a minute, I mean, that gives you some, you know, credibility. Anyways, it's a very good movie. It's not exactly what I remember, but
yeah. Halfway through, there was one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is what it's about. Like, I felt like I was in the place, in the time, when he says, and tonight, something equally epoch-making is taking place. See, they're applauding the DJ. Not the music, not the musician, not the creator, but the medium. This is it. The birth of rave culture. I was like, whoa. I didn't realize we were building to that. And then we were there and I was like, wow, this totally makes sense.
But like in the synopsis I read to try to bullshit my way through this. I think this brings me back to like the point. This isn't a period piece. This is just a fun movie.
I would give.
Well, okay. So if you're going to say this is not a period piece, then you need to define why.
So it breaks the fourth wall, first of all.
So what?
But like,
why is that a rule?
So you couldn't make a Victorian movie where the characters break the fourth wall. I'm pretty sure they do that in that new Bridgerton show.
Well, Bridgerton's smut,
but it is garbage.
Period.
However, it is a period piece. There is no way getting around that.
Period piece, an object or work that is set in or strongly reminiscent of an earlier historical period.
I'm surprised it doesn't give you a distance from which that earlier historical period must be. Even if it is generally accepted to be X number of years before. But
Adam, we've already talked about the fact that the themes that we choose, you still get to choose your, well, whatever, you can argue it.
Your own interpretation of it. So I think that's what I'm getting. Mm-hmm. I want you to defend it more. Is tell me, like, just because this was set in the 70s, because all of these events happen in the 70s, does this make this a period piece?
Yes.
Like, how is this different from a documentary? A documentary is not a period piece, even though a lot of the footage,
well, because this is written and directed,
and there's
it does use occasional footage, that's it.
And he calls it out right in the beginning when his wife is fucking, what's his name?
That guy, yeah.
Howard, yes.
Print like, the truth or the legend.
That's right. The legend. Print the legend. If there's a discrepancy, yeah. Print the legend. So this was all.
What the hell?
This was all about what it's like to be in Manchester.
Yeah. In that time period.
The time period spanned like 20 years, though. Like,
I think Manchester's where Eggsy is from.
That's where that kind of stretches the notion of a biopic.
That did not go to 1997.
No, it goes to like 92 or 94 or something, I think. Like the very end of the movie is.
Okay, 76 to 92 then?
That was the 80s.
All of the 80s.
No, I think that club shut. No, maybe he started a new club. Maybe the new club was in 94. You know what's crazy? I looked up the actual Tony Wilson, and I recognize the guy. I mean, he basically does a lot of TV show shit in Britain still. But yeah, if you look up the real guy, you may recognize him.
76 to 92. Booyah. That is a period of history.
So
in 1986, that's when they made the period piece known as Platoon. And that was, you're talking 14, 15 years after the fact. So it doesn't matter the length of time.
Or even like the Wonder Years. It was in the 80s, about the 70s. Or actually, no, it was like
60s.
Yeah.
And it was the early 90s.
Or we have that 70s show in...
Which is the whole 70s, right?
Yeah. In like...
You know, they're bringing that back. They're bringing that back.
Why?
They're bringing it back as a that 90s show, I believe. And Red and his wife.
They tried to do an 80s.
That would be fun if they recast everybody.
They're bringing them back. And I forget if they're the same characters or if they're different characters. Oh, my but, God. Oh, I think they... I don't remember, but they're bringing that back, I heard.
They're bringing back the gum you like.
So let me ask about the music then. Did you enjoy the music? Do you hate that kind of music? Do you hate punk? Do you hate...
I love wave? This genre of music.
Yes.
Joy Division, New Order. So, yeah. All of that is fantastic.
Stone Roses. I love hardcore, like
just that
old school punk.
Do you like
Sex Pistols?
No, I started listening to...
Quiet, Adam. I told you.
Is that a cat from home, Ira?
It's a piece of a squirrel's tail.
I started listening to a lot of this music because of this movie.
Wash your hands.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I hadn't listened to much of it, especially Joy Division. And there was a band that came out.
Oh, I never knew what Joy Division meant. I never had any association with that term other than this band.
Yeah.
That's I had no idea because it wasn't just the Germans. I forgot. Japanese or Koreans also had them. But yeah, basically brothels where you use the well-behaved prisoners of war and or in Germany's case, like they would use Jews as sexual playthings for soldiers, other prisoners that were behaving well.
Wow.
Yeah.
The other reason
dark, which explains so much to the darkness of their music.
I know it does make the title of the band make more sense.
Ian Curtis has died today. The writer of Love Will Tear Us Apart has died today.
That was weird because when they zoomed in out from that guy and they showed him on a TV, it made me think for a moment, did they actually do that back then? Like obituaries on TV? Just like
no, I think there prior. I think that was.
You think that was real? You think they did that shit?
I think they did that for him.
Yeah.
In that manner?
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of speak to that, right? They're all like, that was a nice gesture, right? Like, I think Tony organized that. Like, throughout the whole movie.
That makes sense. Okay.
Tony is, like, quoting poets and playwrights and ancient philosophers. Like,
he was well-learned.
This is a Renaissance man, right? He knows a little bit of everything. So I think that would be in character for him to hire a town crier for the death of his... one big star.
Fun fact, when Tony Curtis died, Manchester flew their flags at half mast.
Tony Curtis, the actor?
I'm sorry, Tony Wilson. The real Tony Wilson, who died in 2007.
Tony Curtis is Jamie Lee Curtis's father.
Yeah.
He was in Some Like It Hot. You know what movie I watched yesterday for the first time? Because we went to a birthday party and it was a movie theater birthday party.
Ooh.
Singing in the Rain.
My kids are doing that for Saturday.
Singing in the Rain. And
really?
I got
first time. Why?
First time I've ever seen it. Actually, Chris, I was enthralled.
Don't get me wrong. I went and saw The Music Man once, and
if it had been on the TV, I would have not watched it. But because it was an event and it was on the big screen,
okay,
it was pretty freaking rad. Gene Kelly and whoever the other dude is in that movie have moves, and Debbie Reynolds. You know, I know Debbie Reynolds from older Debbie Reynolds when she was in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Like that movie. She's great. She's the mom. where Kevin Kline turns out he's gay.
American Beauty?
No, that movie's great. He's like in a dance pose on the cover. Kevin Kline is.
God, it's on the tip of my tongue. He's in love with Tom Selleck.
Good movie. Oh, fuck. God. Oh, I forgot all
the stuff. Real quick. Wilford Brimley is his father.
In and Out
is a great movie. It is a damn funny comedy. And Wilford Brimley is fantastic as the dad in that movie. But Debbie Reynolds, that's how I knew Debbie Reynolds, was like older Debbie Reynolds. I didn't realize. And then I saw Singing in the Rain. I was like, oh, man, Debbie Reynolds was like the girl, the it girl of her day. And you didn't realize that. But those moves, nobody these days has moves like that. No, they don't make movies like that. Yeah. I mean, Wolverine Tries has done movies like that and plays and musicals, but not like Gene Kelly, man.
It was a jazz dance number in Spider-Man 3, as I recall. Really?
That Make 'em Laugh song?
Oh, God, that is bad.
Make 'em Laugh or Spider-Man
3? Spider-Man 3.
I think my brother-in-law almost walked out of the theater at that scene.
Oh, my God. You know, do we need to do dance and or musical movies as a theme? Because I have a fantastic one.
Yes.
Interesting.
The movie itself put me in that place. And the other reason I love this movie is because I saw it right in the wheelhouse of being in an environment that was this environment.
So it was the right time and place to see that movie.
A kid's birthday or just post COVID?
It was the Improv Inferno was 24-hour party people. It was performing improv was the art that we were all looking for. And it was that 24-hour party people atmosphere for me. And so then I see this movie in the midst of being a part of a community that's partying all night and performing and doing artistic endeavors. And then I see this movie and I'm like, holy shit, it all just clicked.
Mm.
And so I saw what I wanted the community to be, which was this kind of giving, like, I don't care who owns what. I just want the music to be made.
Yeah, but the interesting thing there is Tony Wilson, Steve Coogan's character, was the only person like that. And you don't really get the sense of that until towards the end of the movie. But yeah.
Well, his side character, well, because he was the biggest name in that world, right? The other guys.
But you don't find out towards the end that he didn't have any contracts with any of his artists.
Yeah, they said that earlier in the movie when they signed the thing in blood, when he goes sign in blood.
Yeah. It didn't hit home for me until the end when he lost out on a multi-million dollar deal because he ultimately didn't have anything to sell.
Did you guys laugh at all during the?
Yes.
Yep. A bunch. I think the dialogue in this movie is fantastic. Why is that funny?
What?
Why
was that funny? Because Adam went, yes.
I know I probably would have.
He didn't watch it, but it made me laugh a lot.
I'm just now getting that.
Still working.
I appreciate that you tried, Adam. It's hard to pull that off. Remember, Chris and I during one of those episodes tried to pull off that we really liked a movie and that didn't. We gave in right away. I gave in right away.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to pull off, but I appreciate that you're trying.
Yeah. I can't wait for the movie that you all think that I should love, but I hate, because I'm going to do that. One of these days,
it's a bad theme to try to aim for.
after Ian Curtis died. Yeah. And then Tony Wilson talks about it wasn't all, you might think it's all sad, but it's not. We had a great night at the Russian Club, and then they cut and they just show everybody hanging out and the Alue, Alue! Oh no, we gotta go. Like that shit gets me because I think at the time I was like a lonely kid. I was an adult, but I was a lonely kid. And so to see the camaraderie surrounding something like that, that's why I think I love this movie, is that everybody had the same goal and everybody was in love with the music. And it was all this positive thing, but with like sex and drugs and rock and roll.
You know, but I thought that was in the trailer. Like, that's not what this movie was about.
Shut up. So like he at one point says this movie, because all right, so we towards the end of the movie we see that he has a fucking kid, and he does this quick aside where he's like, yes, I should have told you earlier, but I have a kid that I had with this ex-wife. But this movie's not about me, so we're not going into that. This movie is about the music. It's about the times. It's about Manchester, yada, yada. But it is and isn't, because it's all through his lens. So it is Tony Wilson showing us all of this stuff. They even admit in the beginning of the movie when his wife is fucking the other dude, and then it shows the real other dude from that time, and he's like, I definitely don't remember that happening.
I love that.
So they in the very beginning, they're like, we're going to lie to you. Shit is not going to be real. It is not going to be how it happened.
It's not. Well,
Tony Curtis doing the whole thing.
It's about the feeling of being there.
It is about him. It is.
Well, it is, but it's we don't not care a biography about, any of this stuff Tony Wilson. For him. That's why you can't spend an extra 20 minutes of the plot. But he is the glue
that holds together the theme from the era. He is the record producer. He's the record label owner. He's the hit bar of the time.
He's not
introducing these acts. Like, he's just like, he is truly the glue that makes this story possible.
It wasn't his story, as he said, which is why you can't spend 20 minutes on backstory of I have another child, and this is going to be my third marriage. And
no, but it's almost like
they brought it up anyway. I mean, they didn't have to bring it up.
Yeah.
They acknowledged it.
So, I mean, that's my point, is like, it is his story because he's the one telling it. If it was a factual documentary told by.
Oh, yeah. It's not
Coogan,
a documentary.
That would be a different thing. But no, it's his story. He says he's a small part of it, but no, he's in every scene. Because it's his story that he's telling, but it's also his story as life happened through his eyes.
See, Chris, I felt like watching Tony Wilson, you would have identified with him, especially at the beginning when he says about the hang gliding, that it works on two levels. And then he talks about Icarus, and he says, if you don't know about Icarus, then you need to read more.
That's my first fucking note. I almost wrote that entire quote down. I love that introduction. Yes, yeah. If you know what Icarus is, then great. You know where this is going. If you don't, well, you need to read more.
Well, can you explain what Icarus is?
Well, Icarus was, I don't know, some random ass Greek back in the day that I don't know. I don't remember the specifics of who he was, but he wanted to fly, right? And so somehow, through whatever means, he obtained wax shoes with wings. And it's a metaphor for his hubris. So he flies high and he gets too close to the sun. The sun melts the wax of his winged shoes, and then he falls to his death. In a nutshell, is the story of Icarus. And it is it's a parable about hubris and your ego. And
Icarus and Daedalus.
It didn't have something to do with, like, he was also very vain or
Icarus arrogant. Were held prisoner by King Minos, and Daedalus was like, hey kid, we're gonna get out of here, and collected feathers and wax and made them wings, and they flew out of the tower. Daedalus flew to safety, but Icarus was so like enthralled with his new ability to fly that he flew too close to the sun and it melted his wings and he died.
I had no idea about the escape shit.
That's the hubris, right? It wasn't just, you know, solving the problem to get where he needs to go. It was taking off and throwing caution to the wind.
Yeah, you're jumping out around that corner and pulling the trigger when you should have been standing back and reloading.
Yeah, right.
Okay, cool. So there you go, Brian. But like in the very beginning of the movie, when he said all that, I was like, this is amazing. I love it. Cause it is sort of like it's a movie about his ascendancy and rise to where he was in Manchester in that music scene at the time. And he didn't fall per se, but it didn't end on this magical note.
Yeah. I saw this more as a movie about the gulf that exists between your hopes and dreams and what actually happens, right?
Yeah.
As near as I can tell, like, he was all about that rock star lifestyle, but he never actually got to be a rock star, right? Like, he was managing it. God himself had to come down and tell him, it's okay, it was good enough, right? Like, because he didn't believe this, right?
And actually later in life, he died of cancer. But because of, I guess, Britain's healthcare system, for whatever reason, the drug that he needed wasn't covered by their healthcare system. Interestingly enough, he was a diehard anti-socialist, so he didn't believe in healthcare for all. Regardless, he couldn't afford to pay for his medication before he died. And he at some point talked about how he was the only person in that industry who somehow managed to never make any money.
Yeah.
And a bunch of these people from these bands that were featured in the movie, or at least a couple anyways, put together a charity or a fund for people to help pay for his. Yeah.
This is insane. He was only 57 when he died.
Yeah. Yeah. Renal cancer.
Shit, what a bummer to talk about, because I'm like 57. I'm about to turn 40.
Don't worry, you'll get to see your kids start college.
So when the movie came out, though, he was alive, because I was fascinated by his story because of the movie.
I did see a photo of Steve Coogan and him together, which, now that you think about it, yeah, that's 2002 cool. Is a long fucking time ago now.
That's pretty cool. What a trip to be kind of a failure and they make a movie about you anyway. That's awesome.
But isn't that what Room is about? if he was able to get that kind of music to the masses.
I mean, that's kind of the thing, is like there is no failure when you become that historical guy. Like, yeah, you may die poor and unhappy, but so did Picasso. So did fucking Tesla. Like, but this is just more contemporary. So we get to see how he somehow realizes that he is one of those people that's going to die. Meh, but will always be remembered.
Yeah. By people in the know. I mean, if not for this movie, I don't think I ever would have heard of him.
No, I mean, that's fair. But like Brian and I, I've loved Joy Division and New Order for many years. The whole punk, the old school punk music. I was aware of this story in general, but I mean, even I'm not outside their demographic per se, but I'm way outside the generation they were trying to speak to.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, no, I
not way out, but like the next generation. Yeah. So,
but also, how does, I mean, this is post-punk, so Joy Division, New Order, how does that kind of usher in the new wave era of music? Was this their defining
We're not there yet. No, this doesn't.
There's still that much more time.
Well, no, it doesn't. They're not that. This only centers around, I mean, the only band that made it out of England at the time, really, in my opinion, is New Order. Because like Happy Mondays or Blue Monday Happy Mondays.
Happy Mondays, the band.
I don't feel like they went huge. Like I'm a Stone Roses fan. They were brought up, but even that's kind of like sort of eclectic.
But there's like Depeche Mode, Human League, Tears for Fears, The Cure. Like
none of those bands are within this scene, though.
The Cure has been around since 1976.
But they're not a part of this scene.
They're not part of the scene, but they're part of the demographic it's the expression of the music that they're generating, not necessarily about the optics of it. They just want to make music. They don't care how it's made.
I'm pretty sure every one of those bands that you mentioned, though, had a greater feel for their own optics than any of the bands in this movie.
Probably, like, but
these bands did not give
maybe
a
not
shit.
The Cure, but
Depeche
still.
Mode, The Cure. These are all well-known bands that have an image, have a look. Fucking Robert
The Cars, Smith. Erasure.
He has a look. Like, they're very cognizant of their place within the scene, their scene, which is just different from this one. Adam.
I don't know.
I love you, man. Don't ever fucking talk about The Cure again.
What's wrong?
If there is a band in the world that I just wish did not exist, more than Jewel, and I really, really don't like Jewel.
This guy doesn't like The Cure, Eric.
I was going to get my notes because to prepare for this, like I listened to the soundtrack and I listened to the Madchester playlist on Apple Music and I'm like, wow, I wonder if this is where The Cure came from. Like, because
well, no, because you got so many other things like Bauhaus, Sisters of Mercy, yes. Peter Murphy, yes. like yes. that was a different scene that the Cure would have been a part of.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, actually the Cure has a couple of
There's this dark essence that I'm looking at for it, because after now learning Joy Division, I mean, I did, knew Joy Division was like dour, but for just the title in of itself, learning that today,
we gotta really realize like what before, what came before that.
Wait, so
it's not dour for us today. If anything, it's poppy. It's old school techno. It's fucking, who's the Kraftwerk-y kind of? Oh. It's like pop Kraftwerk's music, mixed with craft. Like, but nothing like that happened until that point. That would have been like eerie, brooding, wrist cutting music.
Well, like I feel Adamant and XTC. I mean, those are, I mean, They Might Be Giants did a song about those two, like being a great playoff of subculture bands playing against each other for, I don't know, edginess or epicness or just who knows what. I don't know.
Eric, I think this is before that point, though. Like, there wasn't a cognizant realization of who you were. You didn't realize that you were at the forefront of a new music scene, or that you were, this was the OG version of that. Just like Steve Coogan, you can make a movie about this and jokingly say someone was postmodern before they were, before postmodern was a thing, but you can't in those shoes recognize what you are doing for any given scene around you.
Devo.
I'm sorry, what?
Devo is since 1972. No,
I would argue though, in 1972, they're when they wanted to put on those stupid ass hats and sing Whip It,
bowls.
They did not know they were going to create a new style of awkward robotic techno 80s music, you know.
But they were doing it regardless of their success. They were doing it, which I think is part of the essence of this movie.
Yes, right? They're all doing it, but they're not
like, it sounds like this was a self-destructive one. Like, I wanted to produce something and have no one own it, right? And that's what I'm getting from the vibe of the conversation.
Oh,
like Joy Division just wanted you
trying to put yourself into the place of us who know what we're talking about because we watched the movie.
Yeah. Oh! I don't think I need to, because the points that you're making.
No, are... Adam, you're not confusing me, but I don't think you're quite there. You should really watch this movie. It's good.
No, I probably will. I just didn't get around to it.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I didn't watch Excalibur, so I can't complain at Adam for not watching a movie. And I'm surprised he hasn't brought that up till now.
We rub it in enough. But so.
But I'm going to watch it.
We'll bring it up on our last episode.
I feel like we did the episode justice.
It looks like a fun movie.
I'm good on the movie, but I want to know what Chris thought of Last of the Mohicans before we stop.
Oh, all right. We can do that. So last week, everybody did Last of the Mohicans, and I unfortunately just from a brain fart forgot.
Chris didn't watch that movie, so he's getting skipped too.
Well, no, wait, real quick. Adam, you didn't watch it. Brian, 1 to 10. 24-hour party people.
That is a solid 9 for me, my friend.
Eric.
6.
24.
I'm going to give it a 7.
I would. I was thinking about giving it a 10 because I love it so much, but I need to reserve my 10. I haven't used it yet, and I need to reserve
it
for the
perfect. Reserve it for your crow.
Truly, 10 is your most amazing movie ever.
If I mean, I already know what my 10 is. I just don't know if when and if we'll watch it. But if that is your crow...
What is it?
There can be multiple tens.
I'll tell you after.
No, shit. Yeah, you can have multiple tens. Like right now, Terminator
2. I know there can be multiple tens, but.
Terminator 2.
Like Alien. 10 prime?
No.
10 to the 1th?
No, those are normal distribution. Maybe, but. No.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe.
A 10 for me is I'm going to hold that till we watch it. And I know we'll watch it because it's a good movie that you all will love and all have probably seen.
Oh, like, I'm thinking about Legends of the Fall. Legends of the Fall is a phenomenal movie
That
I will always watch and have watched a million times. But even that, I would probably only give like a 9.95.
Yeah, it's not 10. No. The 10 I have, I would think is universally loved.
So. It's Top Gun, right?
Shrek.
Office not Space. Top Gun.
It is. Super Troopers. I think it's a 94 picture.
I might give Super Troopers a 10.
No, not even.
Is it 25 hour party people?
Is it the 25th hour?
Is it the 25th? That's right. 20,
it's 25
hour. We should do numbered people. Movies.
Well, all right. So fun fact.
Oh, there's a 23. Isn't there with Jim Carrey?
Yeah, it's room 23. Maybe it's just called 23.
So we've got 23 the something Jim Carrey, room or, yeah. 24 hour party people, 25th hour. Is there a 22nd movie? 22?
There's a James Bond 22.
That works. I'll take it.
So we've all done it, given our scores. Because two of us didn't watch this themes movie. There's only two movies for this theme. So Eric, did you choose Menace of Technology?
I did. That was my
and I chose okay. period.
And piece. Ryan chose period piece.
Out of curiosity, what would your period pieces have been?
Yes, this is my question too. What would you have chosen?
I had an initial one that I thought would have been fantastic, but I forgot. The one that I ended up on was Carlito's Way. 1970s New York drug gang scene with Al Pacino and
yeah.
Yeah, that is a fantastic movie that I haven't seen.
Is Johnny Depp in Carlito's Way?
Not that I'm aware.
No, he's in Donnie Brasco. That's Donnie Brasco.
Yeah, Donnie Brasco, yeah. Penelope Ann Miller.
I was thinking more like a nautical theme, like Master and Commander.
Oh, that's a good movie.
I thought about Master and Commander.
I haven't seen that, and that's one I was like, oh, I could watch this one. And
that was a Ridley Scott flick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was nominated for Oscars.
Yeah, it looked really good.
I'm pretty sure it won at least something.
Well, it won stuff, but didn't win the Oscars.
It's kind of epic. Like, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
That was back when Russell Crowe was turning out good shit.
I mean,
he's going to be in Batman. Batman comes out Friday.
I heard AMC is like cranking up tickets for those showings just because of people want to watch it. So we're going to get our money back and crank the ticket prices up to it.
What a bunch of bastards.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen Spider-Man yet.
Okay. So those would have been the two movies. I feel like, Eric, this is up to us because it's really up to you because you're the only one who hasn't skipped one. But I feel like, Chris, to add to your, well, we could do this, which would be, we could watch your period pieces. We could do that. But then Eric and I get to decide on a skip later.
I think in the spirit of what we're doing here with Movie Sack is, you know, introducing one another to new and interesting movies. Sometimes we're going to make it. Sometimes we're not.
That is such a better description of this podcast than I would have ever come up with.
Yeah, like we're reaching each other's sacks.
That's right. We're reaching into our own sacks for you.
But there has to be
pleasure.
Punishment for not watching. There has to be.
Yes, I think you should deliver pizza to the other participants' houses.
Like physically?
This poor guy.
Pizza, but I'm not driving shit to Chicago.
Yeah. You can
do Eric just wants free pizza because he's
you should do it through DoorDash, right? Like
honestly, I love that idea because then I could just randomly send the three of you that aren't me pizzas
to be delivered during the episode.
Yeah. But like that night, definitely.
But so I think it should be DoorDash delivered like, from your hometown. So it's like a $300 bill.
Or no.
Like you're going to get on DoorDash.
I think you're missing the sticky punishment.
Mr. Beast. And then like a Mr. Beast burger shows up at my house just before.
Guys, you don't gotta get this guy some
like,
food.
I don't watch.
Oh, it looks like somebody didn't watch the movie.
I do like that. That's your introduction.
So it's more like somebody gets a free piece of rose. Like, I'm sorry.
We are skipping. All right. Before we get on to the new. Wait, whose turn is it to pick the theme?
It is my turn to pick the theme.
Okay, don't tell us.
My turn to pick the movie.
No, it's Eric's however, turn. You're getting skipped.
However, and Adam comes right after me.
Yeah, you
so
both
it
skipped.
Does just go straight back to Eric.
So you pick the theme, Chris, Eric picks the movie. So, all right, tell us the theme and then tell us your Last of the Mohicans breakdown, and that'll give Eric time to think of a movie.
I don't have a theme because I didn't realize that it was my turn to pick a
you're
theme.
Fucked.
And
you
I was under the
imp-
I will. I'm not going to necessarily, I don't know. Anyways, so Last of the Mohicans, I saw it a long time ago. I'm going to do this part first.
No, I need time to like think and research. You got to come up.
Yeah, that's
with
why
theme.
I'm. Oh,
no, you what's your theme first?
Oh, well, guys, throw me some themes. Like, I don't
know. Stallone movies.
Drugs.
Space movies.
Westerns.
Ooh, westerns I like.
Self-mutilation.
I kind of like westerns.
Horror.
I don't do
ABCs
westerns.
Of horror.
Yeah, it could be a ABCs of horror theme.
Fun fact, I almost obsession? Bought all four of us that movie poster with 100 of like the movies you have to watch before you die, and yes, they're all scratch offs.
Oh, that's
so funny. As you watch the movie, you scratch off the ones that you've seen.
Oh, neat. What happened?
I almost bought all of it. One of those
regular movies or horror movies?
No, it's everything. It's like the canon of the 100 greatest movies that everybody needs to see. So it's got horror, it's got fucking Citizen Kane, you know, blah, blah, blah.
That's going to be on scratch for a long time.
Ah.
I'd seen a lot of it.
Adam actually has redeemed himself. He gets his pick.
I had some friends in Portland. So there's a video rental place in Portland called Movie Still? Madness. Yeah.
Wow.
Movie Madness still exists. And it's an independent video rental store, but it is enormous. And they've done a fantastic job of like collecting movie memorabilia displayed throughout the store. Like it must cover a city block. Like
that's
there
cool.
are hallways that's between Portland buildings.
It was bookstores are a city block.
Amazing. But I remember seeing, you know, some friends that I made in Portland there circumstantially one night. Like we were in there getting a video and they were there too. And he was telling me, yeah, we just installed like a whole like theater and sound system. We've got a home theater now. And we thought we'd come and get a movie. So we rented Citizen Kane in mono. He was just like, not really putting it to the test, but it's a good movie apparently. So
you dumb bastards.
No. Yeah.
He
I
knew
will never
what
watch that movie.
Right, but
no. All right, so this is kind of broad and interpret it as you will. Kind of the first thing that came to mind. Give us a war movie.
A war movie.
A war movie.
A war movie.
I got it.
Last of the Mohicans. I've seen it before many years ago. My remembrance or memory of it is that it was a great movie, an epic movie. But it's kind of an epic-liked movie. It's... So because I didn't watch the movie, I read the Wikipedia page. I tried to make myself as familiar with the story as possible. When I did watch the movie, it had hard-coded English subtitles. And had I not read the Wikipedia page and had the subtitles, I would not have known what the fuck was going on. Who was who? Is it you or is it your desk that's moving?
Is it
the desk
like lifting?
Oh, you got one of those desks too?
I got those at work. You're just going into the basement real quick, Chris, for a drink, right?
I'll see you later, boys.
No, I love this desk.
Wait. Nope, that doesn't go down anymore.
Moving your chair.
I enjoyed the movie, but everything about the movie sort of dated it to that. This is a 90s epic wannabe movie. All these tropes of these romantic subplots that happen within hours of the people meeting one another that are not fully fleshed out, that don't ultimately end up, in my opinion, with believable outcomes. I feel like there wasn't enough context. It would have been impossible to understand the plot of the settlers and why they wanted to leave the fort, the names of so many people. It seems like it would have been incredibly confusing. Daniel Day-Lewis barely speaks in the movie. And you're right. He fucking runs all the time. Him and his brother and his dad, that's all they do is just run. And then I wasn't a fan of how at the end they dropped the, I'm the last of the Mohicans. When at that point, it was just anticlimactic.
Well, it's
you never said throughout the whole movie that you, your son, and your adopted son were the only ones left. So we just think that you're just, you know, a Native American from this tribe, and there are these other Native Americans from these other tribes, and you're all interacting, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's these white people setting up forts, and there's traitors, and there's mixed messages, and yada, yada, yada. And at the end of the movie, by the way, I'm all there's left.
Well, you knew it was important to say the title of the movie. in a movie, right?
Yeah, that was my first thought. I was like, in that the Peter Griffin.
That was just a dub. Like, you didn't say the title of the movie yet.
No, but that actually kind of goes back to what I said last week, even though I hadn't watched the movie, was this, there was this era of like fiction writers, this feeling culturally that the Indians were disappearing. And it was partly because as we progress, they do recede. We are killing them off. But also, and I think probably mostly, it's a justification in white people's mind to continue to take their land and to continue expanding because they're no longer there, kind of thing. They are disappearing. And so it's a story that is securely placed within the time it was written. And it's a movie based on a story. The movie in itself is securely, I think, dated to the time that it was made based on the tropes it used and you know, the way they did it. It's a good movie, but now that I've seen it twice in my life, I don't need to see it again. I think I told you guys, what did I tell you, 6.5?
Yeah, 6.5.
Like, I don't even know if I could recommend that to someone. I think my threshold for recommendation is 7. If it's a 7, watch it once. 6.5, I got to say, like, if you want to watch Daniel Day-Lewis, DDL, do his thing, this really isn't the movie for that. If you want great drama, high epic period or epicosity, this is not that movie.
Epicosity?
Grandiose period piece? It's not really that movie. Colonial war movie? Not even really that. Like, it's just kind of...
It's a sub-story of them.
It's a high schooler wrote and put out an epic movie in the 90s.
Oh,
man.
Well, I just say, like, it's like that level of... It's not a Braveheart period piece,
but Braveheart's even worse in the grand scheme of things. Of actually,
it may be less accurate. No, I don't care about accuracy, but like, that is a grand movie. It is an epic period piece. It tears at your heartstrings. You are emotionally involved in these characters. As a man, when he is crying out at the end of the movie, being tortured to death, a tear will roll down my cheek. Last of the Mohicans. I'll get up and go get a drink from the kitchen without pausing the movie, kind of thing.
Damn. Heartless.
You saw it, right?
I did, and I love it.
A lemon.
Oh, that's right. Jesus Christ. You gave it a fucking 9.
That's great.
Eric gave it a 9.
It's a good tale.
I see, here's the thing. I never felt more like separated from the general public here.
No, I get the storytelling. Was a little rocky. I watched it 3 times getting ready for the episode.
Wow.
What?
To kind of knit together.
So I read about it and I had such... subtitles. You only understood what the fuck was going on because you saw it 3 times.
Yeah. Yep. That's a little dishonesty there, but I mean,
simple
it.
Conversation things that would, like, there were lines that popped but up in the subtitles that you though, couldn't with... hear. Like, you would not have understood, like, there were tiny details that just would have been missed out on. And I feel like that was the whole movie. And I'm an intelligent person. I understand movies. I typically have to explain movies to other people.
Yep.
But I would have watched this and been like, ugh, really grasping to... Eric, you brought fucking maps.
I did. I needed the maps.
Exactly.
What was going on.
Like, that was a literal huge help. Because in my head, I could remember the general locations of things from your map. So I could understand, okay, that's right. They want to go from Albany up to,
yes,
I don't know, Fort Wilson or some shit. And like, I could kind of visualize things. Like, I needed this extra help to understand, like, this movie.
If one of the characters at the beginning had busted out like a map that looked like this, we would have been like, oh, okay, they're just going
improved upon his map from last week.
I mean, and they very well could have, because they did give us at least 2 title scenes of like dialogue or words.
That's kind of my gripe with movies, is the dumbing down of like, it takes 7 days to walk from here to there, but there are plenty of Indians along the route. That's right. Bullshit. I don't want to have someone explain that to me. I want to glean that stuff, like the people in the woods as the march goes on, like, oh shit, this is bad territory. This is what it's trying to set up. I don't want it to be dumbed down and explained to me when I watch these movies. I want to be able to decipher it, to have that challenge of trying to understand what is going on, not just have it spoon fed.
That's, you know, also me.
I like that explanation, now that, Adam.
Now that you mention it, Brian, you're kind of right. Like, these, they're going from point A to point B to point C within American, within British colonial territory. Regardless of how close it may be to the front, I feel like this front was very diaphanous, because apparently,
whoa,
just going from,
whoa.
Explain what to the listeners that? What diaphanous means.
Okay, so
because I know
this borderline between their territory and our territory doesn't really exist. It's all very flimsy. It's not really, there's not a set point, because apparently just going from one town to another within your territory at this point is deadly dangerous, because the enemy Native American tribes, along with the enemy French, are apparently just as close to you as your allies, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, that seemed weird to me. Like, you wouldn't.
Yeah, imagine the Durham and Raleigh were like Russia and.
No, exactly. Else. Exactly. Like, you can't drive between Durham and Raleigh without like encountering your enemies, because.
Yeah. I can't go to the South Point Mall without getting shot at, but
that's true.
Oh no.
Well, that's true, but no.
I think you mean, what, it was Northfield?
No, North there was Gate. A shooting at Southfield.
There was a shooting at South Point over Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. That's because they shut down Northgate. Now there's only one mall.
It's only one mall to have gang-related activities at.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like, it's a good movie. Like, I think Daniel, you know, DDL is fantastic. And I haven't seen Madeline Crowe in anything in forever. And it was actually kind of nice to see her.
Madeline Stowe.
The younger sister was pretty cute. Yeah. I said Crowe. Yeah. Madeline Stowe.
You were thinking of the Crowe. You were thinking of Adam's 10.
The 10.
Had Pete Postlethwaite. You don't get enough of him. You know, he died a long time ago.
Romeo and Juliet.
But like, he's a cool dude. Yeah. Anyways. All right. So the theme is going to be war based. Eric, that means it's also your movie to choose.
Next week, we're going to watch
Saving Private Ryan.
Where Eagles Dare from 1968.
Danny Boy. Broadsword to Danny Boy. Broadsword to Danny Boy. This is a household term.
Is this going to be an episode that ends on a God damn it, Eric?
Yeah.
1968. Is that Clint Eastwood?
Yep.
Clint Eastwood as a
Richard
Nazi?
Richard Burton.
Clint Eastwood was a Nazi. Counterculture. He was real edgy back in the 60s.
On IMDb, there's a photo, a still frame from the movie, and Clint Eastwood is in a Nazi getup. Allied agents stage a daring raid on a castle where the Nazis are holding American Brigadier General George Carnaby prisoner. But that's not all that's really going on.
You know, I think we should invite Dad.
I was just going to say, should we have Dad guest?
Yeah. I think that'd be a lot of fun to have our dad.
We're going to talk about World War II movies with a boomer.
Are you serious, though? Like, that sounds like a kind of a neat idea, but. Is this the best World War II movie you can come up with to have this conversation?
Yes.
Or is it just a movie he really likes that you guys grew up with knowing because he liked it?
Yes, we are built on nostalgia in this family.
No, fair enough. Yeah. Like,
if not for nostalgia, we'd have no alga at all.
So. I mean, I was kind of thinking of the war theme simply because I wanted to watch Das Boot finally.
So I made a list. Black Hawk Down. Black Hawk
Down is sweet. I love that. That might be a 10.
Dr. Zhivago.
God, no love.
I've started that. I have never finished it.
Or Where Eagles Dare.
Have you seen it before? Oh, wait. Yeah, you guys grew up.
Dad has it on tape.
We've seen Where Eagles Dare many times.
Okay.
But never have I ever watched it like
critically
and
intensely. Yeah, it's like, Dad has that movie on again.
Hey, Brian, you were right that Sean Harris was in 2 Mission Impossible movies.
That's right.
Rogue Nation and Fallout.
Actually, that would be a fun theme overall.
Mission Impossible movies?
No, just have your parents.
Here, there are like 8 of them.
Speak to the war movie we watch.
Oh, my God. Why did I not say James Bond movies?
Because you.
Oh, man. Dad would be all over those, too.
Oh, but can I change it?
No, it's too late.
God damn it.
Yeah. Eric's already thought of a movie.
Fuck.
Now I really want James Bond movies, but okay. Eric, do you have a James Bond movie so we can switch?
GoldenEye? No.
All right, fine.
I mean, I like James Bond movies, but...
Well, Brian has never watched a James Bond movie in his life.
Christopher Walken.
This would be a good thing for him. What? The fucking... that's not a good one. Roger Moore, Live and Let Die. Is that the one with... That's the one with Christopher Walken.
No, View to a Kill is Christopher
View to Walken. A Kill. You're right. Yeah. Roger Moore. But yeah, it's the Let's Flood Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I'm intimately familiar with all James Bond movies.
Nice.
I just confuse titles here and there. All right, everybody. That was fun.
So do you really want... I mean, would that be doable to have our dad on for that podcast? Just to have the boomer perspective? Well,
I think that's a great idea.
The boomer corner.
What are Chris and Brian's dads like? Their relationship with war movies?
Chris, do you want to answer that?
I don't know. My dad's a big World War II buff. I know he's a big fan of the Band of Brothers.
Okay. Oh!
But that's obviously too long. I mean, he'd probably be super happy with like Saving Private Ryan or one of the more... Because he never made us watch, like, there wasn't a movie like this that was popular in the household.
Yeah. Be a slippery slope inviting dads too, because they're also old and conservative.
Well, I'm pretty sure my dad would not be interested whatsoever. And I'm pretty sure I would not invite my dad. So.
Yeah. And I know that as much too. And Brian, what about your dad? Do you think he'd be able to make it?
I think he's busy. He's got
really?
he's playing billiards with Jimi Hendrix and
I'm sorry.
You know what?
I thought Chris would have hit that, but he did not.
I could totally see that. I bet your dad would totally back in the 70s. Yeah, I could see him doing that shit.
That was just a fun setup to let Eric down.
Eric, my father is dead. Thank you for reminding me.
I've gathered that. Has it been long?
What are we at? April 1st, it'll be 9 years. Less than 9 months. Years ago. Some of us don't have dads, so we can't invite them. But if you want my mom, she will gladly watch the Sally Field Coal Miner's Daughter movie because...
Okay, I want to change it. We're going to do that.
No, wait. It's Coal Miner's Daughter isn't Sally Field. It's Carrie. It's the chick from Carrie. Coal Miner's Daughter. There's another one with Sally Field of that time that she would absolutely come on and watch.
What is the movie called again?
Oh, Where Eagles Dare. We don't have to have the dad thing, but...
Just, we can do it.
I think it could be
I think you should invite your father.
Yeah, if this is like your dad's movie and you guys grew up on this thing because of him, yeah.
It'd be a fun twist. And now, old person.
we're going to have to teach dad how to use Zoom.
All right, so here's something weird. Where Eagles Dare, according to IMDb, is 1968, but according to Rotten Tomato, it's 1969.
Nice.
Oh, it's got an 87-89 audience score. IMDb only has it as 7.6.
Well, we're not about quality here at Movie Sack.
But it says you might also like Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. And I do kind of like Star Trek.
I don't think I've watched that one.
Actually, to be fair, that's one of the first movies I remember going in and seeing the movie theater with my family was Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. It's got Captain Von Trapp. The fuck is his name? Christopher Plummer. As the main bad guy, he's a Klingon with a metal eye patch bolted to his face. He's a cool Klingon, and it's all about like Starfleet political intrigue and assassinations and shit. It's a fun Star Trek movie.
Ooh,
nice.
Marina Baccarin has a new TV show.
It does. She shows her, talent.
Also, Marvelous Miss Maisel is released their new episodes. If you haven't watched that series, that is great.
I've heard it's good.
Really good.
I heard it started out good, but has slowly deteriorated throughout its... Because it's got four seasons out, right?
I think only two.
Oh.
It's good. Hmm. It's funny. Maybe two or three. It's good stuff.
Your other war movies, I kind of wish I would have selected Eye in the Sky.
I was thinking Starship Troopers.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And I watched it, I
out of the
greatly
box.
underappreciated that movie when it came out.
I agree.
Yeah. There's boobs, which is great, but that's about it.
Oh, no, man. That's got a lot of great bug shooting.
Propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
That's funny. All right. Somebody just made a noise that made me think of Tool, the beginning of the song Eulogy. Yeah.
It's me rolling my mouse. That's Chris's exit.
Oh, man.
Taking a lot of notes there.
He's just right. Playing Wordle.
Oh. never played it in my life.
No.
So we're watching, say it again for me.
Where Eagles Dare, 1968.
Where Eagles Dare. See, Chris can't even find that on a down. He won't even be able to find that in the way he wants to.
I don't know how I'm going to find it.
Yeah, that's
I assume that's on Amazon. Like, you could probably rent it on Amazon. Where Eagles Dare. I'm excited. Have you guys ever, since we're talking about dad movies, see, that would have been a good theme, dad movies.
Yeah.
Flight of the Phoenix?
No.
Oh, that's a fucking good movie. Jimmy Stewart, Ernest Borgnine, so many others of that era. And they're on their way home from, I think, the war or something. And the plane goes down in the desert and they rebuild a smaller plane out of the bigger plane in order to escape the desert. And of course, people die of stuff in the middle of it. They remade it, but the remake sucks. So the original's where it's at.
Looks like Where Eagles Dare is $4 on Amazon Prime.
Deal.
So yeah, what I want are movies about dads getting along with their children's new stepfather. Like Ant-Man, Mrs. Doubtfire. I'm not sure what else is out there.
You could watch.
I'm sure there's a horror movie based on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a goddamn it line, so.
Goddamn it.
Oh, it's Adam goddamn it himself. That's a good spot.
Thanks for listening.